Communicator, Stephen Ward.
This sound was recorded on the 4th of October, 1965, Medium Listed.
Hello, Rosie.
Hello. Stephen.
Yes.
Good heavens.
Why do you say good heavens, as if you hardly expected me to come? As a matter of fact, we're all here. Well, I say we're all here, of course, in a sense that's not really accurate, because if everyone, well, in fact, it would be impossible, that quite a lot of us are here anyway, or most of the old stagers.
Oh, yes. I'm feeling a sort of pressure on my head. What's that?
Why, I'm not a bit surprised.
Why?
Power is tremendous around you tonight. As a matter of fact, the power here in the room is, I don't know a lot about it in the scientific aspect, I suppose you'd call it, but I know that the power is very strong because I can tell by the luminosity in the room and the whole vibration is all sort of very, I suppose, electrical is the word I could use, although I suppose technically that's not even right. I don't know the technical aspect of this business, but I can always tell when the conditions are sort of very alive or very vital.
Yes.
And there seems to be a very vital atmosphere in the room, which is quite remarkable. And as a matter of fact, your brother has been standing beside you on one side,
yes,
and your mother has been standing on the other, well, practically almost ever since you came in the room, I should imagine. At least soon after you put the light out, they were standing there when I sort of came in.
Oh, yes. I've got the air though, putting a pressure on my head.
Well, I think they're probably sort of trying to give you their love and affection, and
yes,
I suppose you're feeling this sort of power which is being thrown down to you, so given, you know, by them, and of course Marshall and all the other souls who come. Actually, you know, there's such a tremendous gathering of people here. It's very difficult to describe in a sense, because I suppose you naturally think of the smallness of the room, and when we talk about innumerable people, no matter how you try to visualize it, it must be very difficult to understand or appreciate.
I suppose they come for some purpose or other, perhaps, too.
Well, after all, in a way, I mean, this has become quite a famous spot. I mean, all sorts of people come here that are often, well, I mean, regular people, and then there are others who come quite often, and other people are attracted and been brought here. All sorts of bodies come, you know, and interested parties who are not really associated with a circle or group or whatever you like to call it, but sometimes some are brought for enlightenment, people who are perhaps on the fringe, who are interested and anxious possibly at some later date to make a communication. And it's a conglomeration of all types of people, really, in a way, on all sorts of vibrations and different levels of experience. And of course, some, I suppose you would say that they're sort of in a sense earthbound. I don't mean by that that they're not nice people, but, you know, sort of feeling their way, sort of trying to understand this business of communication, and quite often, of course, with the hope of perhaps sometime getting through themselves and possibly making some contact with some other later date with some soul or person on earth they love. You see, after all, in a sense, you see, I suppose it's partly because the medium, you might say, a sort of professional medium. I mean, he sits with all sorts of people, and sometimes relations or friends of those sitters sometimes come here to stand and watch, even though they don't attempt to communicate, so that they have some experience at a later date. They may be able to communicate with their own people, you see.
Yes.
It's really, this is much more than you think it is. You see, I suppose, in a way, you sort of think of it as your own little private sitting, which of course it is, but at the same time it does serve a wider purpose, and all sorts of other people, I mean, take me for instance, after all said and done, in a sense from your point of view perhaps, at least at one time if not now, but my coming, in after all I'm not in any way connected or related to, or I'm not a member or was not a member of your band or souls that you're associated with, you know, and you see, I feel like so many of these other people do, that drawn here and gaining some experience from it, and the realization of communication being a fact, and at some time perhaps being able to make a contact myself. You see, other people have felt like this and feel like this. You see, I mean, this is not just in a sense something that is selfish by any means.
No.
You see, I never want you to feel like that, and I'm sure Marshall must have told you that you must never sort of feel that it's a selfish thing, that you have the opportunity of sitting perhaps twice a week and under your own conditions in your own flat and all when other people have a job perhaps to get a contact at all.
Yes.
You see, you must never feel that this is something just necessarily for yourself, although in a sense, of course, it is, because it's all experience which you love. The point is, it's serving a much wider purpose, and actually all the things that have happened over the years, presumably what I can gather, will eventually be of value to others. They're not just for yourself alone, are they?
No, no. Oh, no. Yeah, I quite realize all that, Stephen, and
yes.
I rather like it.
I'm glad of that, because I know that you're not by nature a self-centered person, by any means.
Yes.
And although you have the privilege and the opportunity of communicating so often, behind it all is the desire that it should be spread and others should be comforted. I mean, even when, for instance, recently we were able to bring Gary through for your friend, although it wasn't reciprocated or wasn't perhaps exactly received with a warm welcome or open arms or whatever way you like to put it, but the point is, it wasn't wasted. And I think that he got pleasure out of it, and I'm sure he felt that although it wasn't fully understood or appreciated, it didn't fall on stony ground completely.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so. I think the seed is sown. But of course, you see, when you sow a seed, you've got to work on it. I mean, you've got to nurture it, haven't you? I mean, the point is there, of course, little or nothing is done to tend it or nurture it or to bring it into fruition. But that doesn't mean to say that the seed will just die. I think that that it will eventually, you know, sort of bring forth some fruit. I don't think it's done any harm. I think that the time may come yet when there will be a desire to know more. You see, I don't think you should feel at this stage that it's a wasted effort.
No, well, I don't.
I mean, after all, when the person in question says, well, if you get any more messages, let me know. It shows a curiosity, and
yes.
It shows an interest.
Yes.
It may be that their idea of it is, oh, well, there might be something of a material nature that might be worth listening to from my point of view, sort of attitude that might be of some help, you know, or value. But the point is that behind, even sometimes, of course, we have to work in that way. I mean, I realize that pretty well myself, that if you're going to get anywhere in a spiritual way with people, you've often got to start on a very material basis.
Yes.
In other words, you've got to give them something to whet their appetite materially, and then gradually work in something a little bit more inspiring and a little bit more elevating. I mean, the point is that you've got to know the people that you're dealing with. You've got to know their mentality. You've got to know the sort of person they are and the sort of things that they will be interested in and will accept. And that's why, of course, quite frankly, so many messages very often in the first instance of communication are on perhaps a material level and perhaps sometimes rather trivial. But it's often those things that make people sit up and take notice and say, oh, well, this is all very interesting. Tell me more, you see.
Yes.
And then gradually, yes, you see, one has to. I mean, if a person is intrigued with this subject, quite often it's because either in the first place, of course, that they've got someone that they love very, very dearly, and they're very anxious to know if there is the possibility of communication. And of course, when they realize, usually, that it is possible, then their approach is usually well, reciprocated in such a way that they receive comfort and enlightenment. But of course, the point is that so many people do try to keep, even we who come on a low level, and it's sometimes very difficult for us because we sometimes get rather disconcerted and, you know, sort of depressed because we feel, oh dear, we want to say something really important or really worthwhile, really something quite above all this. But you still see, sometimes we have to keep on a level, a lowish level, really, for a long time, which is very distressing.
Yes.
Now,
what about you, Stephen?
In what sense do you mean? In what sense do you mean, what about me? I mean...
well, how far have you progressed? Should I put it like that? Or what sort of interest have you now?
Well, It's a rather difficult question to answer. For instance, when you say to me, how far have you progressed? Because in a sense, one cannot really answer that. Because, I mean, for instance, I can say, oh yes, I've progressed a great deal, really, from the point of view of the fact that I no longer think in the same way that I used to. My whole attitude has changed. I'm on an entirely different sort of sphere or vibration of life where I see and witness and experience things which are far removed from the old world. But the point is, it's very difficult to really say how far one has progressed personally. I suppose it is that you know within yourself that you've changed. Yeah. You're aware of the change within yourself. But you're also, as you're changing within yourself and adopting new theories, new ideas, and experiencing many new things, you also realize the immensity of it all here. And you possibly, in a sense, feel that although you've learned quite a good deal, you haven't really perhaps learned a lot. You know, in a way, I suppose that's the joy and beauty of it, because all the time, you know, there is so much more to know, so much more to experience. There's no sort of demarcation line. There's no sort of saying to yourself, oh, well, I've reached as far as I can go. It seems limitless, and there's no sort of line. There's no sort of separation. It's something I can't really put into words, because it's something that you feel rather than you can describe or depict. I mean, I've had all sorts of experiences and met all sorts of interesting people, been to all sorts of interesting places, and I've seen so much that has amazed me and amused me too sometimes. But all the time I'm living and experiencing, and all the time I'm saying to myself, this is so marvellous, this is so wonderful. Mm-hmm. There couldn't possibly be anything more wonderful than this, or more exciting than this, you see. And yet within myself I know that, in a sense, I'm just toddling like a child, and that I'm going to grow up and I'm going to experience so much more and learn so much more and enter into new environments and new conditions. It's the most thrilling and exciting thing, because all the time things are changing. I don't mean by that in a sense you're losing in a sense perspective, or you're losing your feel or your touch, or you've sort of suddenly become something so different that you don't recognize yourself or others. It's something that I can't define. It's something which I suppose is life itself. I suppose it is that mystery which still exists, you see. Although one's learning and experiencing and having all sorts of experiences, all the time there's still mystery. There's still things, sources untapped, and new ventures to enter into, new people to meet, more experiences far beyond your wildest imagination. It's all so exciting.
Yes. Have you managed to remember the door that you were very keen?
Oh, I haven't got there yet.
You haven't?
No, I don't know quite what's wrong with me, but I don't know in a sense what's wrong with me. I suppose everyone can say what is wrong with me. When you realize the tremendous possibilities of this life, you sort of feel, oh dear, you want to do so much so quickly, and you realize that you can't force anything. It's something that within yourself happens. And then as these things happen within yourself, so these vistas become visible. In other words, the invisible, or that which seems hazy or seems far removed, and you have a vague idea of it and yet you can't reach it, comes gradually into view. It's something as if you yourself, within yourself, yeah. You know within yourself when the moment is right and when it is not right. And yet you're not miserable or depressed because you can't reach a certain goal. And you, in a sense, although there again this is contrary or contradictory, if you like, there is no goal and yet there is a goal. It's an invisible goal. It's something that you feel and sense and know of within yourself. Every step, every experience, every individual that you meet, every conversation that you have, all tot up, all mean something. And nothing is lost, and something is gained. And although perhaps in a sense you look back, as I do, I realize that the earth life, it is important. I don't think one should ever say to oneself, all this life of earth, what is it? What does it amount to? It's all so pointless, so useless. And often you hear people say that, and I suppose, I'm sure there must have been moments when I've said it. But the point is that it isn't really, because although it's short in its duration, if one must put it into time, it isn't in a sense. Every moment has something. Every experience, whatever it may be, good, bad or indifferent, every individual that you meet, good, bad or indifferent, in fact, everything, after all, that is life. It is an aspect of life of which you are a part. And even when you've left it behind, as I have, it's still in a sense a part of you, because you don't completely sever yourself. I mean, there are people who've been here, I suppose, thousands of years in time, and yet I'm sure they would admit that although they cannot readily enter into the material way of thinking, and certainly are far removed in themselves from material things, they are not completely severed. By this I mean that there is this compassion, there is this tremendous emotion, which is a great reality within oneself, that you know that you are part of every human being, no matter how low they may be, how undeveloped they may be, or how inexperienced they may be in spiritual things. The whole thing is that I see myself now, of course, still as an individual, but at the same time, I wouldn't say insignificant, because no one is really insignificant, because everyone that draws breath, everyone that has life, whether it is in your world or this, everyone is significant. But the point is that one feels the immensity of life and the tremendous wonder of it all, that you are part of this living reality, and that when one person suffers, in a sense, though you're not suffering, not perhaps looking at it from the material point of view, people are in the material sense, you are affected by it, you are part of it. You see, it's this tremendous feeling within oneself of desiring to be helpful and desiring to instill within people who are still particularly on earth that we love, and even people, of course, that we are in no way connected with from the point of view of relationship, but we may be brought into contact with. And sometimes we feel if only we could say to you something that would help you or comfort you or uplift you, something that would give you an incentive, for instance, to see life as it really is, to realize the purpose and the meaning, and to realize that this present situation for which you may find yourself in a sense good for you, not necessarily bad. When people are suffering, of course we suffer too. We don't suffer physically, but we suffer in a mental and a spiritual sense. I would never like anyone to feel that I, speaking for myself, although I know it applies to all of us here, that we are in a sense separate from you. We may not be with you completely, but we have not lost sight of you. We've not sort of gone so far that we cannot feel for you, and haven't lost the desire to help you. Of course, we shall always endeavor to do what we can.
Thank you.
It's very difficult to explain certain things. You see, I don't think anyone can. I don't think Dr. Marshall or myself or any soul, no matter how highly evolved that soul is, can ever find words to express the intensity of life. I suppose that's what it really amounts to, the intensity of life within each one of us. And of course, naturally, the more highly evolved a person becomes, with the wider their horizon, the wider their experience, the greater is their realization, and the greater is their understanding, and the greater is their sympathy, and the greater is their humility. I think it is this humility that comes upon one, which is the most striking thing. Sometimes at first, perhaps, it's a little shattering. I suppose, particularly if you've been, when on earth, for instance, someone of importance, or you've held some place of high standing, or perhaps you've been feted here, there, everywhere, and you've been courted, as it were, and everyone has sort of looked up to you, and within yourself, even though you have, as it were, been looked upon as a great personality, or whatever it may be, you've become when on earth. Yet within yourself, I think the higher you rise, if you are honest with yourself when on earth, you realize that you're not really, in a sense, any of the things that people perhaps think that you are. And quite often, I think, one feels, not ashamed exactly, but one feels that one's, oh, I don't know, that one has placed oneself in an invidious position. This may sound very strange, very odd, but over here one feels it even more intensely. I think the whole point is that the higher you rise, the more humble you become, and the more sort of sensitive you become to the thoughts of others. And when people praise you, or want to thank you, or want to convey something to you of appreciation, it isn't that you want to reject it, it isn't that you don't want to appreciate it, you do appreciate it, but somehow you feel this shouldn't be necessary. You
yes,
sort of feel, you know, you sort of feel to yourself,
yes,
after all, I am doing what I'm doing because it is the thing that I should be doing. It's because it is the right thing within myself I know to do. I'm not doing something because I want thanks. I'm not doing something because I want appreciation. I'm doing it because love demands that I do it. Love commands that I do it. But in a sense, even that is wrong, because it isn't love that's demanding and commanding. It is love that is prompting one.
Mm.
You see, I don't feel. It isn't that I've lost my individuality or my personality, or I've lost myself, as it were. But I feel now so much more in tune, I suppose is the word, with so many people of all nations, of all types. Of course, naturally, I'm more drawn to people who have so much. Well, yes, of course, that is true. But at the same time, I feel drawn to others who are less informed, others who are, I don't know, so totally, perhaps in a sense, different to myself. But not drawn to them in the same way, naturally. I would be drawn to people who have the same tastes and interests as myself. But I'm drawn to them in another sense of way. I feel, oh dear, this person hasn't learned to appreciate, hasn't been given the opportunity perhaps. Circumstances beyond their control have driven them in a different direction. They are the victim of perhaps society, or perhaps they are the victim of their own lack of being able to sense or to feel. There's something wrong that I feel as if I want to try and do something to help them. Sometimes, of course, it's practically impossible. One never stops trying.
But I should imagine that you would be very capable of doing anything like that, Stephen.
Yes, but you see, the point is, I think we all have to realize that we can all be helped.
Yes.
But at the same time, we ourselves, to some extent, have got to share the initiative. We've got to share the desire from within ourselves for guidance. Often perhaps the person in your world, they're in a very unhappy state, and they're calling out from within themselves, if not audibly, but from within themselves, oh, help me. I mean, people always say, whenever they're in dire distress, particularly, even people who are not religious, who don't accept God and so on, oh, God, help me. You see, it's an automatic human cry from the heart, and it always happens even with the most irreligious people, when something dreadful or dire happens to them. As it's when the person is calling deeply from within themselves that we can, to some extent, reach them. But of course, the tragedy is that man invariably calls from within himself when
yes,
he is in trouble,
yes,
when he's in great need, when yes, he feels that it's essential for help. The point is, of course, we do help naturally whenever it's possible to help any human soul. Under any circumstances, we will do everything in our power to help. But the point is that man on earth, invariably, when things are going the way he wants them to go, when things are going the way, you know, well, he doesn't bother to think about anything under the material. The only time he ever really thinks about God, or thinks about things of the mind and of the spirit, things that are really fundamentally good, is when he's in dire distress. And, I mean, if a man is sick and ill, he calls for his doctor. He doesn't probably have much faith in his doctor at the best of times, but at least it's a straw to clutch on to. It's the same with religion, of course. A lot of people, they say, oh yes, well, I'm a Christian, or I don't go to church, of course, but I accept, you know, yes, well, because I'm brought up in it and so on and so on. But when something dreadful happens and they really think, oh dear, well, I must call on God, you see, or they call on the church, or they call on the pastor, you see. The point is that when people are in dire distress, then they call, they want help. But the point is, of course, that one should realize that one can only receive help, one can really only receive anything of real value when you yourself have, by your own initiative and your own desire and your own effort, brought into being from within yourself the possible change that will enable you to not only receive help, but also, more important still, give help to others. You see, people are, unfortunately, the vast majority of human beings, utterly self-centered. They think of self all the time, and very seldom think of others. Their whole life is centered around themselves. It's only when you forget yourself that you begin to live, that you begin to sense and feel and understand and know, and really become a useful individual from the point of view of being of assistance and of real genuine guidance to other people. In other words, all the great teachers, from what I've been able to gather, and I've met a good few already, and I've been to temples, vast temples, and I've been shown and introduced to people, and I've been introduced to sights and sounds, vast experiences of centuries upon centuries ago. I had unrolled, you might say, before my eyes, incidents that have happened thousands of years ago, and so much has been taught me. It isn't necessary to read books, although you can have books. Here you can see much that has transpired, indeed I suppose all that has transpired of any value to the human race. You can learn, you can go back in time, you can step back 2,000, 4,000 years, you can be of that period of time, and you can in a sense become conscious not only of it by seeing what happens, but in a sense being part of it. I don't know how to describe this.
Can you possibly go back 2,000 years? Because you haven't passed over so very long.
Yes, but I've had this experience.
You have had?
Oh yes, I've been very fortunate in the respect that I've been able, with others who are much more highly evolved than myself, who have enabled me to enter into past events. You see, I wish I could explain this, because there's nothing lost. You see, if you can think of a timeless world,
yes.
I think it's this business of time that is the difficult thing. And everything is of the mind. Everything is of thought force. And there are billions upon billions upon billions of thought forces which are on different stratas or different vibrations, which when one learns the art, or you are fortunate enough to meet people who've been here sufficiently long to understand, it's possible to enter into worlds of thought force, which can be thought forces of untold centuries ago, and in that thought force or that thought world is the replica, is the reproduction, if you like, of timeless incidents and places. Nothing is lost. I wish I could explain this business of nothing is lost, because this is the only way, of course, really, that any human being can hope to learn and can hope to gain knowledge and experience. You see, it's not only possible to go forward in time, but I do think it's terribly important to realize that as you can go forward in time, so you can go back.
Yes, going forward is no use without being able to go back.
You see, that's the point. You must have this ability to move forward. At the same time, the only way you can move forward is by the knowledge of having gained the experience through having moved back or entering into past thoughts and ideas. You see, I can see myself as I can see you, and as I can see Leslie, as I can see other people that I've got to know fairly well, and I'm interested in, of course. And I suppose there again, it can only happen if you're interested in the people,
yes.
Because if you're not interested, then your conscious mind is not concerned. But the point is that I can see you, in other places. I can see you as other people, as I can see myself, and as I can see the medium. You see, the point is that until we realize that we are the product of untold numbers of experiences in varying bodies and under varying conditions, in varying periods of time. You see, when we can get this timelessness, when we can realize that time is, in a sense, an illusion, and the reality of life is the fact that life has never just begun any more than it's going to end. In other words, that life is always there, but it may take shape in different forms over different periods or experiences. But the point is that it's always there, the soul, the spirit is always there, and it's only the shadow and the form and the shape. And these shadows and forms and shapes are called bodies, if you will, as they must have been and still in a sense are. But as you enter into a new body and you, as it were, become in a sense a new person, although you're not really, you are still part of the old. In other words, all the different entities that you've been, or the different bodies that you've inhabited, although those bodies do not exist in a physical sense, they exist in a mental sense, and the process of being able to enter into the mentalities and the realizations, and indeed, one might say, enter into the hopes and the fears and the joys of past lives, past thoughts, past experiences, all these are the things, all these are the happenings, all these are the part of time, or the parts of time, that make us for the moment, and what we shall become in the morrow. In other words, the past and the present and the future are all one. It's something which has infinite variety. It is that we are ceaselessly going through, although we don't realize it when on earth, but we are ceaselessly and slowly and surely going through evolution. We are evolving, I suppose. It is that we are all gradually, so gradually that we hardly realize it, but the point is we're all gradually evolving, and no one, I don't care who it is, I'm sure I'm right in this, no one can say to what we may become, or how much we may become, or where we may be going, not in the sense, because we are obviously in a timeless world where nothing is impossible, where everything is possible. Indeed, we are in many worlds, entwined together, and we can, as it were, go backwards, and of course gradually go forward. But until we've learned the backward and the experiences, and we've readjusted ourselves, and we've assessed ourselves, and been assessed by others too, I suppose, we can't hope to go much further. In other words, we are evolving slowly forward, but we can also go backward, and it is the going backward that gives us new knowledge. Although it is in a sense old knowledge, it's a reassessment. In other words, we are all the time expressing and learning and knowing and becoming, and we are abandoning and throwing off, and we are simulating, and we are, as it were, changing. Changing is subtle. Mm. But we have memory, and we have remembrance, and we have so much that we can anchor on to. It's extraordinary. I can't explain this in words.
But I suppose there is no forgetfulness once you pass over. Is there no forgetfulness?
Yes, there is forgetfulness. Of course there must be. Shall we say, I put it like this, that there's forgetfulness of certain things which no longer have any important part to play.
Yes.
In other words, in evolution, as I see it, as I've already learned to experience and understand it, one has to experience all manner of things. And when one has taken from a certain existence or a certain life or a certain incarnation, if it means incarnating back on earth, in other words, it's that you assimilate all that you can, the good, the bad, the indifferent. In other words, you become, you evolve, and gradually, it's like being in a balloon, I suppose it sounds stupid, but when you're going up in a balloon, if you want to go higher, then you keep throwing out a lot of stuff that's no longer of any value, anything that's holding you down to earth. Then you, if you want to go higher, you've got to keep throwing out the ballast, you see. And I think that's as we are, as beings, as human beings, that as we aspire, as we desire for higher knowledge, as we desire for a higher expression of ourselves, then we gradually discard the worser aspects. We discard the experiences which have been valuable, but at the same time no longer can be valuable to us. We learned what we could from that experience. It may have been hard or difficult, and indeed sometimes it could have been materially perhaps very happy. But the point is that all the time we have been learning and experiencing, and as we progress, the higher we go, so we have to keep casting off much of the old self and past memories, because those memories are no longer of use to you. Those particular memories could hold you down rather than help you to go up, you see. It's a process of elimination, but to do this elimination you've got to know yourself. You've got to know what you were, how you were, why you were, where you went wrong, what you did, why you did it, whom you hurt. You've got to meet perhaps people that you perhaps consciously or unconsciously did some harm to. You see, you cannot escape from yourself. You've got to find yourself. You've got to be humble, and you've got to lose the false ideas, the false pride, the false teachings, the false conceptions. In other words, you've got to, in a sense, I suppose this is what it says in the Bible and what some religious people have misinterpreted, you've got to sort of wash yourself, as it were. I know this sounds in a sense stupid, but you've got to be able to thrust from yourself all that is evil, all that is bad. You've got to learn, and you've got to at the same time express. In other words, you've got to get right with yourself. And you've got to, when you get right with yourself, when you really understand the meaning and the purpose and the being a real person, I don't know how I can put this, but the point is that it's a gradual elimination. It's something that you must do, you can't escape. I didn't put it very well.
No, you're putting it
very well. Yes, I understand. You see, there's no easy path, there's no easy road. It's quite obvious that no religious organization, no religious body, and no church, no temple, no priest, no cardinal can really show you. I mean, he may be able to point a way. I don't say that he cannot in sincerity give you a pointer, but nobody can absolve you. No one has the power to absolve you from yourself. Only yourself.
Yeah.
I think there is a great deal of fundamental good in all religions, in all teachings, because basically they're all exactly the same. But man has misinterpreted them. Man has put material aspects to them which have no reality at all. You see, man has always tried to explain things in a material way. You cannot explain, the same as I'm having difficulty in explaining things of the spirit in a material language. There are most things, quite frankly, one has to feel, one has to know from within oneself. I suppose we're getting back to the old word, faith. But the point is that it is true to say that if you have faith in the realization of truth, if you understand that you yourself is the only one who can achieve, people may guide you, people may help you, but no one can do it for you. You have to have faith within yourself that you can overcome, that you can truly, in a sense, become, because you have made the effort. No one can do it for you. It's something which is personal to every individual.
Yes.
Yeah, it's terribly difficult to put this into words.
Different.
But anyway, what I want to talk to you about next time, if I can, is some of these experiences that I've had in walking back in time, because I think they'll be fascinating to
you. I'd love to know what you have been. And
yes, well, it isn't only what I've been. That's another odd thing. I suppose it's very necessary. I mean, it's not only walking back into some aspect of my own life in past time, but it's also walking back into past life of other people's time, which is fascinating.
Yes, absolutely.
Anyway, I must go, and we'll talk about these things on Thursday, isn't it?
Yes,
all being well, anyway.
It,
anyway, all being well, I'll try. I mean, one can never be sure, but
no,
if it's possible.
I
anyway, it's nice to see you looking so fit and well.
Thank
and all these things have done you a world of good.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, I'll see you on Thursday. And all my love and blessings. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.